Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today, I'm sitting down and having a chat to Alison Coughlin, who is the author of The Health Hazard and an absolutely incredible woman who we're going to chat to today about burnout and pretty much how to look after your own well-being and being proactive in that sense. So welcome, Alison. Thank you for coming on today and having a chat.
Thanks so much, Alex. I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you. Well, I'll get you to introduce yourself a bit more because you have had a massive experience with burnout itself, but equally, yeah, just would love to hear about you and your experience.
Yeah, great. So I guess all of my career has been in the health and social sectors, so almost 30 years now, and originally as a researcher, and then I moved into public health, and so have had the good fortune of doing a whole lot of work in a whole lot of different organisations, both as a consultant, but also as a leader over the years. And as you kind of, suggested there, I also have my own experience of burnout. And I would say over the years that there are a couple of times that I fell off the hamster wheel. So this concept of just pedaling like a mad woman, busy, 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 always more to do, always more need, being pulled in lots of different directions, never ever thinking about my own well-being because I was a good person doing good work and away I would go. And I would describe, hindsight is a beautiful thing, but what I would say with my retrospectoscope on is that there were multiple times that I had like an acute experience of burnout over the many years. And that would be usually, when there was a crisis that would happen because we're human beings, right? So there's crises that happen in our lives, so a death in the family. Sometimes it was when I was in a toxic workplace and really, really impacted by the culture of the workplace, or a crisis around funding or a challenge conflict in the workplace. And I would describe it that each of those times I would hit the deck, and then sometimes I would get unwell, like physically unwell, and then I would have a period of time where I'd kind of hunker down, lick my wounds, restore somewhat, and then I would get straight back on the wheel again. And that is kind of how I see now that I lived my life for many, many years and sustained this state where I was basically running on near empty all the time. 7 years ago, I have an experience, or I describe an experience in my book where basically I hit the deck. So I was face down. So it was the accumulation of a whole lot of challenges in work and in our personal life, again, in my personal life, because, again, we're human beings and I'm a mum and I've got three daughters and I was the leader of a national charity at the time, and there was the culmination of lots of different events and challenges and pressures and crises, and I was down for the count. And this time, I guess, was fundamentally different. So this time I didn't actually know whether I would be able to recover. I certainly didn't know how I was going to recover. I'd left my role, and so all of that, purpose and sense of identity was also gone, and I was really lost. But I was the primary breadwinner, had three kids, I needed to work, I needed to earn an income, and it also felt like I'd sacrificed so much over the sort of 20-odd years prior to that at the time, and it was a pretty dark place to be. But I put on my researcher hat and, my consultancy hat and all of the skills that I'd learnt over the years, and decided that I was going to work this out. And partly it came from a place of actual basic fundamental need, because I was so not okay and potentially no good to anybody, in particular my family. But, you know, what would all of this be worth if I actually wasn't able to recover in this instance? And so I made a choice to actually put my well-being as a priority for the first time in my life. And I only did that because of my capacity to serve others. But if that's the starting point, then that's a good starting point, because what I then discovered on that path towards my recovery basically fundamentally rocked all the things that I believed and how I approached my life and my work, and flipped things on their head. And so what I could learn about how I could manage my energy, what I learned about actually prioritizing my well-being, and what that enabled in the life that I have had since that time. And that was a very long and rambling answer to your question, but I guess the choice in the last few years, as I have charted a course to recovery, but as I've then been working in the sector, doing great work with great teams, but it's almost like once you see it, you can't unsee it. And everywhere I go and almost every room I walk into, there are people who are just simply not okay, and they haven't been okay for a very long time, but they're not supported to be well within these sectors. And so that was the impetus to, you know, life was going really well and I was really well. I might just write a book, you know, like what the actual. But so I wrote a book, and the direction of my work has shifted to being really focused on this whole area of the resilience revolution that we need in our sectors, and completely new ways of thinking and working, so that burnout isn't an inevitability in our system and in our society and our workforces.
Wow, there's a lot to unpick there. There's so much. No, that's incredible. But you're so right. And something you mentioned in your book as well is that, in particular, and we see it all the time, is that, you know, the health sector is very vulnerable to burnout. And I remember reading when burnout was first described, it was, you know, observed in healthcare workers. So I think that's pretty incredible. But something I like in terms of what you talk about is that it doesn't need to be inevitable, and it's something that if you proactively work on, and if you, you know, put yourself first, like you said, that you hadn't ever done before. And I guess it's something that we always think, if we're not caring for other people or putting other people first, then, you know, we aren't doing our jobs very well. So I think there's a lot to unpick there, and potentially like with healthcare and the fact that we are pretty much there to look after other people. And so, yeah, we do put ourselves on the back burner for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess if that's the prevailing culture and norm that we have within our workplaces and our services and our sectors, then actually that's not sustainable. And so we have lots of things that are both choices that we make personally, but also these norms in our systems and sectors that actually can precipitate, and often precipitate, a path to decline for individuals, and a path to unhealthy and sometimes toxic cultures within workplaces, where it's all about pushing through, and it's strength, and it's stoicism, and it's me last, and, you know, just push on. And some of those things can be helpful sometimes in some circumstances, or taking our cumulative grief, or our, you know, the trauma or the things that we're exposed to in our work, and learning skills about how to compartmentalize that so that we're able to be functioning and present in the moment. But that is a, you know, that's like a pressure cooker that's gonna explode if you don't let some pressure out. So we've got strategies and norms and techniques that are acceptable within the context of our sectors, And that's usually not about compassion and for yourself and self-care. And so how do we actually sustain ourselves, or do we just accept that it's inevitable that I'll be able to do this until I can't anymore? There's got to be a different way.
There absolutely has to be, and in particular at the moment with the pandemic, and you know, the healthcare sector is getting absolutely hammered. So I think it's really important that, you know, no one's going to come and rescue you. You got to be your own sort of hero. You got to save yourself, really. And so just in terms of, for our listeners, what is burnout? What does it constitute? Because we hear it thrown around all the time, but what does it actually mean?
Yeah, so it was characterized as an occupational phenomenon. So it is effectively derived from workplace stress that has not been effectively managed. And so there's three kind of common hallmarks of burnout. So emotional exhaustion, and I'm not talking about just being tired, but, you know, physical, emotional, psychological, complete depletion. Then there's depersonalization. So you can develop like a sense of detachment, and sometimes that can be experienced as like, you know, callousness, or even a, you know, an inability to be able to see the, you know, the purpose and why you were doing this work in the first instance. And so that emotional connection to your work. And so the third dimension is around reduced personal efficacy. So this loss of confidence in our competence, feeling inept, feeling like maybe we don't belong or we're losing our drive. And that actually then precipitates a pathway towards actually decreased function and decreased effectiveness. So I describe the kind of the syndrome of burnout as, you know, a vicious cycle in action, because you can see if we're exhausted and we're running on empty and we're starting to lose some of our joy and belonging and attachment and to our work, and then we're also starting to question our confidence and on a slippery slide, then that's going to further precipitate our decline, as well as impact on how we turn up and how others are turning up within our workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems, like you said, very multidimensional, and so it's not just this emotional exhaustion that, you know, people sort of talk about. So it's really interesting, and it is something that is feared a lot with students that are, you know, they see mentors and they, you know, they talk to people who say prevent burnout. And then how do we prevent it? So you did mention at the start that, I guess, sort of taking control of your own sort of journey made you kind of get this insight into sort of what was, I guess, possible.
Yeah, so there's a series of dimensions in this, and I think it's really important to talk about personal responsibility as well as the responsibility, you know, in our society, at our system, you know, in our sectors, from our leaders, in our workplaces, and at that team level. So there is that basic fundamental lesson that nobody was coming to rescue me, no matter how wonderful I am and what marvelous things I've done over the years. I had to hack myself back to life and find that pathway, and no one was able to do that for me. And actually, it was only once I chose that for myself that I was truly able to actually chart that course. The fundamental piece within that is that, so I'd been a national leader in a cancer service, and a statewide leader as well in a different cancer service that was all around supportive care and information and support and peer support for women with cancer. And I'd been exposed to information about wellness techniques and, you know, lots of things like meditation, mindfulness, exercise. I wrote the statewide policy for for psychosocial care for oncology in the in our state, with all of those dimensions about well-being, etc., was I adopting any of those things in my own life? No. Did I think that I was kind of eligible or it was about me? No. And it, there was this thing going on about, you know, I could always see people who were so much, you know, there was so much more suffering than anything I was facing in my life, or, you know, there was all this comparison. I just need to keep going. There's more people with need. The reality is, once I started adopting some of those self-care techniques, which were not news to me, what I discovered was that my life became infinitely easier. So, like the self-talk, like the negative spirals, the worry, the insomnia, the, you know, things that I, did I wear them as a badge of honor? Maybe, yeah, my busyness, I work really hard, it's all about blood, sweat and tears. I actually could get more done in less time and with more joy. I had a clearer head. I was a better mum. I was more present in my relationships, in my life and in my work as well. I was able to hear, deeply hear what people were saying to me rather than, you know, worrying about something or thinking about the next thing or thinking about my response. So I think I became more effective as a human being interacting in my family and in my work from actually looking after my well-being. And the other kind of fundamental thing, and I think this is where the leadership piece comes in, is in retrospect, and this is a big personal ouch, I recognize that I was a really lousy role model when I was in a, you know, CEO role, in senior leadership roles, because what I was modeling was this relentless, it's not about me, it's never about me, just keep going, blood, sweat and tears, don't mind doing extra work, sure, email me anytime, because I care and I do care very, very deeply about the work that I do and have done and will do. But I made that mean something that actually made me less effective in the long run. And ultimately, if you get to the point where you're face down, that's not very effective if you care very deeply about the work that you're doing. But also that relentlessness, it just doesn't serve you in the long term. So I think it's really important that we think about our individual role and what responsibility we can take for our own well-being and the control we can take for the things we can control. But we absolutely need to be looking at how we lead in this sector, the culture and the norms that we set within workplaces, and recognize that the ones that have been in place for many generations don't serve us. That's big, but it's not going to start unless we start to see leaders emerging saying, I'm going to reject burnout as inevitable, and we're going to find it a different way where we achieve the outcomes we want to achieve for the communities that we serve, but we have a thriving, resilient workforce of people who find the fulfillment and meaning that they're seeking through their work. Not that we push them beyond their limits until they can't go anymore and we leave them, or they leave us, or worse. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's incredibly powerful. And I guess we can start doing that as students, becoming those role models, becoming those leaders that are going to be the future employees that will eventually lead other people. And I think, as you said, most of these things that we do in terms of mindset and mindfulness, etc., are all a practice as well. So I guess if you're practicing this in your first year on your placements or in your own life, in, you know, when you're at uni and everything, the better you'll become at it. So the more resilient and the stronger you'll become when you actually have to do this as a full-time job for however many years you want to do it for. So, and preventing that what people think is inevitable, which it doesn't have to be, and that's burnout. From that then, What is your perspective on when people, particularly in these sort of healthcare roles, sort of tie their identity to it? Because you'll talk to people and they'll be like, I'm a paramedic or I'm a nurse, and like, that is my whole life sort of thing. That is what they identify with. How do you think that can be a negative or barrier to good well-being?
Yeah, so there's a range of risk factors at those different levels that I talked about. So society, system, you know, organization, team, role, and personal level that can make us vulnerable to burnout. And of course, if we're working as a paramedic, for example, there are probably multiple risk factors at every single one of those levels that any individual might have. So first of all, I would say it's really, really helpful to be aware of those risk factors. And it's really interesting because I was doing the research for the book I was writing when I learned about many of those. Yeah, so I came from my lived experience and also what I'd observed and the work that I'd done in workplaces. But when I dug really deep when I was writing the book, I went, holy moly, no wonder this is so endemic. And so one of those personal level risk factors is if you derive your sense of identity and meaning from your work. Now, I've worked in these sectors for a very, very long time, and I can't remember a team discussion where we've talked about why do you do the work that you do, that people don't say, to make a difference with my life, because I care very deeply about the work that I'm doing, because I can use my skills to save someone's life. These are fundamental, very personal, core drivers and beliefs, and they are fundamentally and intrinsically linked to the meaning and fulfillment that we derive in our life and the legacy that we seek to make. And so, but that's also a risk factor for burnout. And so the awareness of those risk factors and the awareness that there are a whole range of things that are at play here that make me vulnerable, and I'm either going to take those things really seriously and be proactive about how I actively manage that throughout the course of my career, or those vulnerabilities will manage me without my consent. So it's a beautiful thing to have that fulfillment and meaning from derived from work, and that sense of identity and pride. You know, you're going to get out of bed every morning, you're going to do a whole lot of things that you probably don't really want to do, and some things that really light you up and energize you, and you're going to get exposed to things that are going to rock you to your core through this work, and some things that are just absolutely life-giving for you and for others, then that's an amazing thing, but it needs to be wrapped and protected and nurtured. And the only way you can do that is by doing things to ensure that you're safe. And I don't just mean physically safe, psychological safety at work, and that you're maintaining your well-being, and you've got a whole lot of skills and strategies that you're using to make sure that you are constantly maintaining and growing your well-being, because you need fuel to burn and energy to burn and well-being to burn if you're going to be able to turn up in the way that you want to within your career and be able to sustain that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's incredible. And I love the fact that the thing that you talk about in particular is, and that you've mentioned a couple of times, is basically this is your responsibility. You are your responsibility, and taking accountability for that. And that stems in everything you do in terms of the job. So why not take that responsibility for you, which I think is really important. So how do we start to take control of our well-being and start to proactively manage that so that we don't head down the path of burnout?
Yeah, so the start of that is actually a bit of a rumble. So it's a rumble with core beliefs that are potentially going to keep you more vulnerable than you need to be. It's the rumble with things like, it's not about me and it shouldn't be about me. Well, I can tell you, if you're burnt out, it's going to be about you and others. So the core beliefs about that this is inevitable, like acceptance that this is inevitable, practices, and I get it that this is tricky, right? Because these things are perpetuated within our education systems and within what the behavior that's modeled within our workplaces, and this is not unique to paramedicine, through the health sector and in many of our not-for-profit sector organizations as well. And so there's this concept about, actually, in order to sustain myself and in order to achieve what I want to achieve in my career and life, the most powerful thing I will ever be able to do to be of service to others is to put myself first. And that holds, my belief is that holds for, if you have a family, if in your workplace, in the relationships that you have in your life. And so this concept of self-compassion and compassion for others, of course. Yeah, but you can't pour from an empty cup. And so what are you going to do to make sure that you're okay? And so accepting that, rumbling with the feelings and the judgment that's coming, your way from you, most importantly, and probably from others, about, well, that's selfish, and, selflessness and self-sacrifice is what we should be aiming for. Sure, until you burn out. So like it's if you think about, on average, across the course of your lifespan, across the course of your career, if you adopt concepts of selflessness and self-sacrifice, you will drain your energy and well-being reserves, and your well-being is likely to not be sustained if you are taking on really, really tricky, challenging roles. And so the choice, first of all, and then secondly, it would be around assembling a toolkit and trying techniques and finding things that work for you, and recognizing that at different times, like that this is an ongoing process, at different times in life there'll be things that work and things that don't work for you, but being committed to this as a lifelong, career-long process of stress relief techniques that you can implement in a really short period of time, in understanding and having insight into the things that light you up and make you happy and keep you well. And it will be completely unique to you. So it's being near water, it's walking in nature, it's, exercise. We know about all of the benefits of, maintaining, a healthy diet and exercise and those sorts of things. But what does that mean for you personally? Who are the people that you surround yourself with that give you energy? And then on the flip side, what are the drainers? Where's the stresses? Where are the energy vampires? What are the things that you do that drain you? And how have you got that as a balance? And so making habits that last you for your lifetime, that are around, how am I tracking? What are the things that matter to me? Where's the pain? Where's the joy? What do I need to do? And actually being mindful, just like you would planning for your career or planning your work day or, being involved in a strategy process within a workplace, think about your own strategy that's going to keep you well. So insight, shifting unhealthy and unhelpful mindsets, and growing and building your energy reserves, and doing things to stop the drain. So much of our emotional energy can get expended on things that are absolutely out of our control. So just choosing, what am I going to rail against? Where am I going to choose to put my energy? Choosing to do things that are within your control and within your influence. If you really want to change the system, think about, what's that path to you being a future leader, where you get to be a part of this change that needs to happen in the sector, rather than sitting and railing against all the things that are broken in the system. Be a part of that change. So the toolkit of techniques and skills to maintain your own well-being, as well as the willingness to actually be a disruptor within the sector, and to be a part of really a movement and change towards a better and a different and a more sustainable, a more effective and a more efficient way forward for our system.
Absolutely. Those are some fantastic strategies and really great insight into pretty much, or challenging, that culture of busyness. And I think too, as you said there, like, as a disruptor, I guess you don't have to be kicking against the walls or doing something really drastic. It's just being that role model of someone going, hey, you look like you're coping really well in what seems to be a really difficult situation. How did you do that? And that's, I guess, what at the start too, when you said being that role model can be really just simple and just emulating all of these things that will prevent you from going down a path of burnout. So I really think that's powerful. Now, what would you say to people who will think that, this is a bit overwhelming? Like, where do they start?
So I would say it is overwhelming. You are correct. But start really, really simple. So I'd start with a commitment around, I'm going to actually take this on. I'm going to commit to maintaining and growing my well-being. I'm going to commit to being a part of the change that we need in these sectors, and I'm going to do it one tiny step at a time. I'm going to, so there's the two pieces, I guess, within that. Individually, I'm going to develop insight into what matters to me, and I'm going to take small actions to chart a course to better. I'm going to try new things. I'm going to put the things that work for me in my toolkit, and I'm either going to do them regularly or I'm going to draw on them when I need to. So I'm going to build my own personal kit of tools that support me. Within the context of our workplaces and our sectors, I'm going to start talking about this with others. I'm going to share this. We're having this conversation, right? How awesome is that? There are many, many more conversations, and COVID has, you know, one of the silver linings of COVID is we are talking about this. The downside is it's because we're in a crisis situation with our workforce. I started writing the book before COVID hit. I finished it in lockdown, in the pandemic. But the stats that are in the book that are so alarming are pre-COVID stats. About 35% of people in direct and indirect roles, and we weren't talking about it. So we've been talking about it now, but there are stigmas around this. There is stigma around being vulnerable, being seen as being weak. You know, there's norms around strength and stoicism, as I mentioned before. And so what we have is this extraordinarily vulnerable large minority, or maybe majority now, and it's a fundamentally unsustainable. And let's not pretend that this leads to, you know, a good use of resources, to great teams and great cultures and us being our best at work. So having conversations, being prepared to model the way forward and to be vulnerable, to ask the question, to challenge, to exercise your right to disconnect when you're not at work, to ask, is this really urgent? Yeah, was that really necessary now? Can I attend to that when I'm back at work next week? Like pushing back and not just no, but a part of a conversation about these are some of the things that need to change. These are some of the things that actually contribute to my decline. And shifting over time so that we get to the point where we're normalizing this, where we've got leaders who are talking about this, where we don't feel like we're going to be stigmatized or we're going to be vulnerable if we ask for time out because we need support to restore our well-being. We need to take a time out. So there's a long way to go, but it's not going to happen unless we're actually putting it out there, having the conversations, rumbling with the concepts that make us feel uncomfortable, and finding some like-minded peers who are going to be involved in this, because feeling like we're on our own, like, let's think about that. This is somewhere between a third and maybe half of our workforce. So there are plenty of people that are feeling the same way, but they might not be talking about it. So what are the ways that we can challenge our leaders to open up safe spaces for us to have these conversations? What are the ways that we can learn ourselves and share and grow and connect with others who want to make a difference here?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And just in terms of when people are unsure sort of where to start, I would point everyone towards your book. And once you start reading it, you don't want to put it down. And there's a fantastic amount of activities in there that do get you to challenge these preconceived ideas and get you to start thinking about what fills up your cup and what doesn't and all of that. So I think that's a really fantastic resource that anyone can get onto just to start somewhere. And so point everyone into the direction of your book. I've recommended it to so many people because it's fantastic. Tony Walker, who's the CEO of Ambulance Victoria, you said he put a was it a commentary at the start of the book?
Yes, he's written it.
So that's like an example of, you know, leaders, you know, starting to create that conversation around these things. And yeah, it's really important. And we've had fantastic guests on the past. There's a paramedic we talked to last year, and her name's Georgia Mitchell. And so she's really open about burnout and really looking after yourself on her pages and everything, because it's something that really impacted her. And now she doesn't want students and young clinicians to, you know, get into this habit of thinking that that's quite normal. So I point everyone into, you know, contact for all these people. As you said, it's about talking to others and making sure you're not alone, because as you said, there are so many people out there that are experiencing this.
And this has, you know, recognizing that it's a continuum as well, that, you know, some people might have the, you know, the hallmarks of burnout as a whole, or be experiencing a whole range of things along that continuum. But it's clear that it's too much and it's not sustainable, and it has devastating impacts on people's lives, both the people who are affected themselves, their families and communities, but also at a fundamental level, it impacts on safety and quality and the experiences of the care that we provide. So it actually makes us less effective as a system and a workforce when we're running on empty. And if that's the only reason we decide to focus on this, you know, retention in the workplace, absenteeism, you know, like, the workforce challenges are immense, and this contributes in such a colossal way to that. So as leaders, you know, if we don't want to be losing great people because they just can't sustain themselves, well, then we're going to have to think of a different path forward and a different way of leading and creating cultures that support well-being and resilience and achieve great impacts for the community.
Absolutely. I really do appreciate you coming on and chatting. My final question for you would just be, what is, I guess, just your biggest takeaway, biggest advice for students and grads?
I would say that compassion for others is probably the reason that you chose this career, but compassion for yourself is the only thing that will determine your capacity to achieve the success that you want to in your career. And if you lock that in right from the very start and you practice that and honor that and hold your own heart and mind and body, you know, as dearly as you would that of a patient or somebody that you love, then you will go a very, very long way, much further than you will if you make a different choice.
That's fantastic. So thank you so much. Just to finalize, how can people listening get, you know, more about you? And you've got your book, The Health Hazard. Where else can they find you?
Yeah, so they can go to my website, which is just my name.com. So alisoncoghlan.com, not my name.com, alisoncoghlan.com. You can see there's information there about the book. If you order it from me, I'll send you a personalized copy, and I'll also send you a copy to gift to somebody, because that's a part of that ripple effect. Or you can get it on audiobook if that's how you like to consume your content. And you can also subscribe. I've got like a weekly blog that I write with just a simple tip or strategy and a call to action, just to keep this habit growth and formation happening in our weekly lives, a reminder. And a lot of the people that read that go, oh, that just came just in time. I really needed that today. And it can be a simple reminder. It can be a stress relief technique, a mindset shift that actually helps this process. So yeah, I'd love them to find their way to the website. There's information there on how they can contact me if they want to get in touch.
Fantastic. Well, I'll pop all of that into the show notes so everyone can just click a link. But that's fantastic. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate you coming on and, yeah, talking about such a really incredibly important topic that we don't get told too much about. So I really do appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.